tried to cover her mouth. Lily was too busy laughing to resist.
"He's strong, saved me, and he's kinda cute. Plus, I've read a lot of elven smart novels that had humans in them and may have developed a kink."
Ash's eyes widened and he turned bright red from blushing. He brought up a hand to scratch at the back of his head. Phelan knew his mind was trying to come up with a response.
"Sorry, I don't date smokers."
Kate tried to keep her mouth shut, but the potion was too strong. She grimaced as it finally won.
"Wasn't even considering dating. I just wanted you to fulfill a few kinky fantasies of mine. Damn it! Will someone please shut me up?"
Phelan stepped forward and cut the bindings on the harpy's wrists. Her hand shot up and covered her mouth like a vice. Lily, still being restrained by Cleo, gave her a look of disappointment, but Phelan didn't want to hear how the harpy hoped Ash would fuck her. Cleo finally released Lily so she could rub her temples with her hand.
"How about we all agree to forget everything said after Lily started speaking?" Cleo asked, still rubbing her temples. Everyone except Lily nodded their heads in agreement.
Chapter 32. Selena cracked open the window of her bedroom. She peered out into the dark of the night, searching for any light from her father's guards on patrol. Her stomach was twisting itself into knots at the thought of what she was about to do. She had only ever committed the most minor rebellions against her father's rule. Yet, her ironclad faith in her father's word had started to rust since the day that elf visited. She had tried to deny it at first. Her father and Fargo's conversation replayed in her mind to see if there was a chance she misunderstood. No matter how she interpreted it, the results were the same. Her father was not a good man. Tonight was her last hope to salvage his image in her mind. She had discovered the address of the butcher shop the elf had referred to. The district her father ruled had 3 butcher shops in it. She learned from making small talk with Ella that there was one her father would visit, but never purchase anything from. He would just have the guards wait outside while he entered. When she was sure no patrols were present, she lowered a rope out of her window. She had found the long rope in the hidden speakeasy, which had an odd collection of items left over from its sordid past. Stealing her resolve, Selena began climbing down the rope. She wore her jeans and t-shirt, despite her father's assertions of it not being proper. The outfit gave her more freedom of movement than her dresses, which she doubted would permit her to climb the rope. Soon she was past the grounds of her family estate with no issue. Her heart raced as she entered the city of District 208. She had seen the lights at night from her window, but now she was here. Sure, she had been to the district during the day, but she had limited freedom to explore, and always with several guards watching her. At nighttime, the district glowed with the humans' artificial lights. The lights were made of twisted, glowing glass that formed words to announce if an establishment was open or to state what kind of refreshments were served there. She even discovered the tavern Ella had told her about. She stuck her head inside, but was forced to retreat quickly. Ella was there, though it took a moment to recognize her. She had always seen Ella in armor with a sword on her hip. Here she wore jeans that had been cut scandalously short, showing off her toned tan legs all the way up to her thighs. She wore a bright red shirt that had a silhouette of someone kicking high in the air. One of the large screens above the bar that showed her beloved blood sport held her attention. She cast a glance in Selena's direction only for a moment before returning to watching the screen. Thankfully, Ella had not recognized her. She had a desire to explore more of the nightlife of the district that for so long she had been left to only ponder. She shook the thoughts from her mind. She had disobeyed her father for a purpose more than to roam the district for her enjoyment. She had done it to either ease her mind of his supposed guilt or reaffirm her fears. The butcher shop was an ugly, stone-colored building made from bricks that humans called cinder blocks. There were no bright lights around it or one to announce if their business was open. Just a single dim light over the door that barely illuminated East Butcher Shop, painted in blocky letters on the building. Selena approached the door, only to discover it was locked. She figured this adventure would not be that easy. Skirting around the side of the building, she began to look for another way in, which she discovered in a side door that had been left ajar. The door opened into the back of the butcher shop, and Selena discovered herself standing beside a large walk-in freezer and a steel table used to process the meat. A window peered into the next room, which had a display case for the meat and an area for people to place their orders. Everything seemed normal, except for a set of stairs that led to the shop's basement. They had been obscured from view by a stack of boxes, though a few had been pushed away, revealing it. A faint light came up from below, and Selena slowly started to descend the stairs. A hand clasped around her mouth, and she felt cold steel against her neck. Somebody behind her started rushing down the stairs.
"Well, well, well. What was a pretty thing like you doing here so late? That desperate for some meat?"
The man's breath reeked of booze.
"Who the hell is that?"
another voice said down the stairs. The basement of the butcher shop came into view. Chains hung from the walls, and the floor was covered in soiled hay. The place reminded her of the torture chambers some of the villains in her books used. A short orc in a stained shirt came into view. He held a pry bar in his hand and seemed to have been removing the chains from the walls. He shook his head when he saw her and pointed the pry bar at her.
"The boss said no more. He wants us to take apart all of this downstairs. He's out of the slave trade. He won't pay us for her. Hell, he might kill us."
Once they got to the bottom of the stairs, the man behind her pushed her forward, and she fell to her knees. Selena crawled to the wall and put her back against it. She finally got a glimpse of the man who had been behind her, a scarred-faced elf who leered at her. His tongue ran across his bottom lip as he looked her up and down. A shiver of disgust ran through her.
"The boss wants us to get rid of all the evidence. She saw this. She's evidence. That means we can do whatever we want with her, as long as we get rid of her."
The elf started approaching her, but the orc stopped him with a firm hand on his chest.
"Then we kill her and be done with it. We only have tonight to break this place apart, or it's our heads. There's no time for any of that."
The elf gave her one last look and sneered.
"Fine, but we're taking a horn. Unicorn horns are valuable magic reagents, and we'll be able to find a buyer, even with Sero dead."
The orc gave a nod in agreement.
"Like fuck you are!"
a voice yelled. A furious Ella raced down the stairs, holding a long knife in each hand. She must have found them in the butcher shop upstairs and armed herself. The orc swung his pry bar, only for Ella to duck under it. She was faster than the orc and had no trouble slitting his throat before he could react. A stream of crimson liquid poured from his neck onto the already stained shirt he wore. The elf tried to run back upstairs after seeing his friend die. Ella threw one of the blades, missed, and then threw the other. It sank into the elf's back, dropping him on the stairs. He was still trying to drag himself up them when she approached him. Her foot stomped down on his head, creating a sickening crunch as it collided with the edge of the step.
"Lady Selina, are you all right? Did they hurt you?"
Ella asked as she looked her over.
I'm fine, just shaken up. Thank you.
Selina started sobbing and shaking. Her body felt like a trembling mess she could not control. Ella helped support her as her knees felt weak.
"Let's get you to my place. Once you calm down, we can figure out what to do,"
Ella said as she rubbed her back. A few people gave her odd looks as they made their way to Ella's home. Ella would sneer at anyone who looked too long and tell them to piss off. Soon, they came to a multi-story building. Ella's apartment was located on the third floor.
"Here, it's all I have to drink in this place besides beer,"
Ella said as she placed a colorful metal cylinder on the table before Selina. Selina held the blanket Ella had given her around herself and stared at it. She knew it was a human beverage called soda.
"Right. Your dad keeps you pretty isolated,"
Ella said with a sigh. She took the cylinder and pulled the lever on top of it, creating a popping sound. She placed the human beverage back on the table, and Selina heard a fizzing sound coming from the drink. Not to be rude, she raised it and took a small sip. Sweet flavor filled her mouth, and the fizzing tickled her tongue and throat.
"This is delicious," Selina said.
Ella gave her a sad smile.
"How about I get us some fast food delivered? We can eat and you can fill me in on what the hell you were doing,"
Ella offered. Selina was soon devouring something called a double bacon cheeseburger. The thing was a greasy mess, but she could not get enough of it. Same with the sticks that came with it called fries, which had a sweet crimson sauce one was supposed to dip them in.
"Okay, first question. What the hell were you thinking, sneaking out? If I hadn't seen you stick your head in the bar, you would be dead right now,"
Ella scolded while pointing one of the fries at her. Selina gave a nod of agreement. Hindsight, her plan was poorly thought out. It was true that if Ella had not come, well, she did not want to think about that.
"I had learned some information about Father. Things I did not believe, so I absconded into the night in an attempt to verify if there was any validity to him."
Ella leaned forward and took a sip of her beer. She looked around the room as her mind contemplated something. Finally, she let out a sigh and gave Selina a somber look.
"Lady Selina, King Destry is a good father to you, and he keeps you sheltered from most of the outside world. Because of that, you don't see his other side, his darker side."
Selina dabbed her mouth with a napkin.
"The men that would have murdered me tonight, they worked for my father."
Ella sighed and took a bite of one of her fries.
"Well, good thing I didn't call it in then. What was that place even for? It looked like a damn torture chamber."
Selina sighed. She started telling Ella about the secret tunnel in the library that led to the speakeasy, how she had used it to spy on her father's meeting with the elf named Fargo, and all she had learned. How her father was a slaver, and how he was planning with the elf to kill Councilwoman Blackthorn. Ella held her head in her hands and let out a laugh. Selina did not see the humor in the situation, but she said nothing.
"Oh, shit. This is bad."
Ella started to fidget with the paper their fast food had arrived in. She looked at Selina and shook her head.
"I'll walk you back to the estate after you're done with your burger. Climb back up the rope and tell no one you slipped out or about the butcher shop. The night guards are slackers, so I doubt they noticed you were gone."
Ella stepped forward and gently grabbed her by the shoulders. Selina looked into her eyes and saw tears welling in them.
"Lady Selina, I want you to know that our friendship was more than my job. I truly consider you my friend and care about you. Tomorrow, I'm going to give you something. I want you to take it into the secret tunnel in the library and tear it open. Nowhere else. No matter what, promise?
Selena nodded her head as a tear ran down her friend's cheek.
I promise.
Ella wrapped her in a hug.
Chapter 33.
It was a restless night for Ash. His mind was still racing with everything that had happened. Yesterday had been like a war or natural disaster, and he was the one who led people through it. The thought had had him recalling his actions with Saro and the trolls. Even though the event had happened days ago, it felt almost like it had been months. The ash before the trolls' attack on the beach and the ash after were two different people. The old Ash would be disturbed at the prospect of killing someone, let alone executing someone. The Ash he was now didn't find the prospect disturbing, and that was what worried him. The United States government had stripped him of being human in the legal sense. He now questioned if he had removed the rest of his humanity himself. So what if he had? The reason was well worth it. His fingers caressed Phelan's back as she slept curled up by him. Despite their date, Naomi had asked Phelan to stay the night with Ash. Apparently, the salamander swordswoman had picked up a third date rule from one of the movies at the slumber party. She was staying with Luna in Phelan's room, a floor down in the Flatiron. The two girls had talked about seeing if Celeste, Lily, and Jacqueline wanted to join them for a second slumber party. Finally making up his mind, Ash kissed Phelan's forehead and rolled out of bed.
"Where are you going?"
a groggy Phelan asked.
"I'm feeling restless. Going to get some fresh air."
A half-asleep Phelan grabbed his pillow, pulled it down in front of her, and wrapped herself around it.
"I'm holding this hostage until you get back. It smells like you,"
Phelan said as she buried her face into the pillow. Ash smiled at his lover as her breathing fell into a rhythm that told him she had fallen back to sleep. His phone showed it was just after midnight as he made his way out of the Flatiron onto Lily Street. A few guards from both the Frozen Scales and 114 Pack greeted him as he exited the building. Kate had already left with all the zombies, including Ray, to apprehend Fargo. Still, the gangs were on high alert after all that had happened yesterday. He heard a soft thud to the right of him and turned to face it. Leaning against the Flatiron in a black hoodie with killer bunnies in bright red and gray yoga pants was a very familiar rabbitkin.
"Never thought I would see you like this again," Ash said with a smile.
"Of course you would. I love this hoodie."
Cleo, disguised as Silver, left the wall of the Flatiron and walked over to him. She wore a small smirk, one that would only be noticed by someone who knew her.
"What are you doing out so late?"
she asked.
"I could ask you the same thing."
Ash returned her small smirk with his own. Silver shrugged.
"Maybe I saw you from my window. Thought I would hop down here and spend some time with you. That way there will be all kinds of nasty rumors spreading of you leaving your wolfkin girlfriend asleep in your bed, only to visit a beautiful rabbitkin in the dead of night. You might have some explaining to do to your two girlfriends."
Ash let out a laugh and shook his head. The only explanation he would need to give would be to tell the girls that it was Cleo as Silver.
"Honestly, I'm restless. Just thought a walk would help clear my head," Ash told her.
Silver gave a nod.
"Want me to leave you alone, then?"
He shook his head.
"No, I would probably just stew in my head if left alone. Also, don't tell Councilwoman Blackthorn, but I may have missed hanging with Silver. Silver smiled at him before flicking her hair. There was a difference between the two of them, even if they were really the same person. Councilwoman Blackthorn had a carefully crafted image to help manage her many responsibilities and the reputation she had earned back on Voss. Silver didn't have to worry about her image. She was who Cleo would be if she could. The two of them walked down Lily Street in silence for a time. There were still many people out, even at the late hour. Much like the guards at the Flatiron, even with the undead gone, many people were still on high alert. Especially those in the rescue, medical, and the firefighter brigade. Haley gave him a nervous wave from a bench outside of one of the buildings, which he returned and earned him a smile from the Otter Girl. The sisters and the team of emergency firefighters they had assembled were still actively keeping watch for fires. They had already put out 3 blazes before they became serious enough to spread to other buildings. The lights were still on in Lily's shop, which was being used as an emergency clinic. There were several injuries during the attack, and, unfortunately, a few deaths. Thankfully, the clinic was able to stabilize those with injuries, and they were expected to heal, with just some scars as a reminder.
"I'm sorry I wasn't able to help more," Silver said.
He could hear the regret in her voice. "I know you did all you could to help. The council tied your hands." Silver let out a frustrated groan.
"Coming back to the council kept those backing Destry and Sero from giving them aid. Logically, it was our best move, even with the limitations placed upon me. The reality was, I wish I could have changed into Silver and fought alongside you, Phelan, and Naomi."
Ash looked at Silver. Her ears hung lower, and she had a pout on her face as she thought about her inability to aid them. "If you get all mopey, I'm gonna start petting you again," Ash teased. Silver's ears shot up, and she popped him in the shoulder with her fist, wearing a smile on her face.
"I thought I told you never to mention that."
Ash chuckled as he saw Silver faintly blush at the memory. She shrugged and tried to play it off.
"It did feel good, though. Relaxing,"
she admitted quietly with a smirk on her face.
"Maybe I should take you up on it. I wonder what Phelan would say if you came home smelling like a bunny, though."
Ash grimaced and scratched his chin. He was sure Phelan would wave away any talk about him being seen with a rabbitkin when he told her it was just Cleo. Coming home and smelling like a rabbitkin, even if it was Cleo, probably wouldn't end well. His scent was serious business for Phelan. Silver let out peals of laughter at his reaction. "Well, tomorrow justice will be served for the attack," Ash said, once she calmed down. Silver nodded her head.
"Is that what's weighing on your mind? The execution?"
"The thought of killing that Fargo bastard doesn't bother me at all. The fact that it doesn't bother me is what's weighing on my mind," Ash said as he ran a hand through his hair. Silver gave a nod to him.
"The last few days have been a rapid change in what your life has been and your responsibilities. Reflecting on that is good. I should have done it more myself. Had a lot of time to think while in that safe. Had I reflected on my choices in life sooner, perhaps I could have avoided being locked in the damn thing."
For a moment, there was a flicker of vulnerability in her eyes. Ash gritted his teeth at the thought of Cleo being locked in the safe, alone in the dark with just her thoughts. Humans and most paranormals would have died within minutes. Cleo was a fae, though. Her body could survive as long as she had magic. "Anyone who even thinks of putting you in a safe again, I will rip to shreds.
Ash said with a growl. His magic flared, giving his scar a blue hue. The glow illuminated a smile that Silver wore on her face and a shine in her eyes.
Careful, or you really will end up smelling like a bunny.
Silver gave him a heated gaze as she bit her lower lip. Ash's eyes widened and his breath caught. Then he saw the barest hint of a smirk under her seduction. He gave her a grin and shook his head. The seduction dropped, and Silver let out a chuckle.
Damn, I thought I had you with that one. Guess I will have to wait a little longer before you're my footstool.
Ash rolled his eyes and gave Silver's shoulder a push. She laughed and gave him one in return.
Jerk,
Silver said with a smile.
Let's head back.
Ash sat at his desk the next morning, going over the damages done to the district by the undead invasion. District 236 would compensate him for most of the damages once it was fully under Kate's control. Some of the most serious were caused by the fires. Ash was already looking at setting aside a budget to get some proper firefighting equipment and to turn the emergency firefighters into something more permanent.
Ash, please!
A pouting Lily stood beside his chair, holding up her phone with the power cord attached. Naomi, Phelan, and Lily were hanging out in his office, with the excuse that they wanted to help him. Phelan was the only one doing any work, researching prices on what they needed for the district. Naomi was following a makeup tutorial on her phone, and Lily had been playing a game on hers. He still appreciated Naomi and Lily being here, even if they were not doing any work. The company was nice. And he was sure if it was just him and Phelan, then she would quickly go from being his secretary to his sex-retary. Lily, I could fry your phone. Just use the outlet, Ash said, gesturing to one of the outlets on the wall. Lily's pout grew, and she batted her eyes at him.
That's far away from my chair, please, Ash.
He shook his head at her. I'm not any closer to your chair than the outlet, Lily. She hit him with the full effect of her puppy dog eyes. Letting out a groan of defeat, Ash took the plug on her charging cord and held it between his fingers. Don't blame me if I fry your phone, he warned as he sent a steady electrical current through it. Lily looked at her phone and smiled as she saw it was charging.
If you do, I know you'll buy me a new one.
Lily climbed up onto his lap and sat down. Ash was about to say something, but he was cut off, as Lily ground her ass against his groin as she got comfortable. He felt his lower half react to the pressure and rotation. Lily must have noticed as well, because she started grinding against him again. She froze and stopped her grinding, her eyes widening as she locked them with Phelan and Naomi. Both of his girlfriends had stopped what they were doing and now were staring cold daggers at Lily.
Huh, so that's what fear feels like, Lily said.
She hopped off his lap after setting her phone on his desk. Then she dragged the chair she had been using over to him until the cord would reach. She then took her phone and climbed back into the chair. There was a knock on the door before any more chaos could ensue. Ash tensed a little. Kate still had 8 hours left to bring Fargo to them. He was expecting an update at any time.
Come in, he said.
The door opened to a smiling Celeste, who had a satiress standing behind her. The satiress held a stack of papers and looked nervously at the ground.
Hey, big boss! Sierra here has something she wants to give you,
Celeste said as she held the door open for the satiress. She hesitantly made her way into his office and placed the stack of papers on his desk.
The children drew these yesterday, Sarah said nervously.
Ash recognized her the moment he saw the crayon drawings.
Sarah had been the member of May's staff who had watched the children as they made their way to Lily Street. While most of May's crew ended up working the kitchen of the Flatiron to feed everyone, Sarah was one of the few who didn't. She had instead volunteered to help keep an eye on all the children on Lily Street. She and other volunteers did their best to help distract the children from the crisis. The girls gathered around him, and he let out a laugh as he saw the first picture. A crude child's drawing of Phelan, Naomi, and himself fighting zombies. The next one was of the Otterkin sisters putting out a burning house with water magic. He made a mental note to give this one to them. He switched to the next picture.
"Is that me? What is on my back?"
Lily said as she looked at the picture. Ash smiled. He knew exactly what was on her back. The kids of the district would consume human media just like their parents, pulling concepts and ideas from that. Only they would consume media targeting kids. "It's a cape, Lily. The kid who made this one sees you as a superhero," Ash said. The picture was of Lily standing before Lily Street. Her cape billowed in the wind, and the vines she controlled reached into the air. Behind her stood a woman with horns that was clearly Sarah, and several smaller figures that were the children. Ash slid the picture towards her, and she took it. Lily stared at the drawing in silence for a moment.
"They think I'm a superhero," Lily said softly.
Before more could be said about the pictures, a voice spoke from the doorway.
"Ash, it is time. Kate is on her way back."
Cleo stood in the doorway with several of her banshee sisters. The time Ash had been waiting for had finally come.
"We'll be right there," Ash told Cleo.
He turned and smiled at Sarah, who was now a ghostly pale. Cleo, or her reputation, had that effect on people.
"Thank you for bringing these to us, Sarah. If you see any of the children, let them know we loved them. Celeste will see you out after we've left with Councilwoman Blackthorne."
Kate waited for them below on Lily Street, a nervous Ray standing beside her. Both of them stood behind a roughed-up elf with his hands and feet in chains. Kate seemed to have taken out some of her frustration at being enslaved by the elf. He had the appearance of a man who thought highly of himself. His clothing was of a high quality, and what Ash thought was traditional elvish wear from Voss. He sneered as they approached him. His mouth was open to say something, only for vines to bunch up and sock him in the stomach. Vomit poured from the elf's mouth instead of words, and Ash gave Lily a questioning look.
"He knows alchemy and could have taken something that would counteract the truth-sayer potion,"
Lily answered. She stepped forward and forced one of the potions down the elf's throat. They asked him a series of questions confirming his guilt. Unfortunately, the buyers of the macabre magical reagents had used random middlemen in their dealings with Fargo, Saro, and Destry. Cleo would get no information on which council members had backed the horrible enterprise. A crowd had gathered on Lily Street to watch. The scene reminded Ash of movies that showed medieval executions. The movies always portrayed it as a source of entertainment for the masses, who would cheer and leer at the criminal. Unlike the movies, there was a somber silence on Lily Street. This was not entertainment for the people of District 114. It was justice. Barbaric, but still justice for those who had suffered. Cleo projected her authority as Councilwoman Blackthorne as she read out the charges and gave the verdict of death. She gave Ash a small nod when she was done. As the boss of the district attacked, it was his duty to carry out the sentence. Ash walked towards Fargo, pulling on his magic as he did. Fargo's eyes darted around nervously. No longer did he sneer or have an imperious demeanor. Instead, he looked afraid and panicked. Ash raised his hand to place it on the elf's head.
"Wait!"
the elf called out. Ash froze his hand, hovering over his head. He looked into Fargo's fearful eyes.
"I can make you wealthy, make you powerful magic items."
Ash's hand clamped on the elf's head. Bribery wouldn't save him. The fact he had even tried to bribe him by offering to do for him what he had for Destry had snuffed out any indecision he had about the execution. He pushed lightning through his fingers. Fargo twitched under his hand as his eyes rolled back and jaw twitched. Ash was controlling the flow. Too much and he would pop Fargo's head like a ripe melon. Too little and the elf would die slowly. After about 20 seconds, he let go of Fargo's head. The elf fell lifeless onto the ground.
"I don't want him buried in this district, and I don't want to see him as an undead. Any kind of undead," Ash firmly stated to Kate.
The harpy nodded her head in agreement, and Ash shifted his gaze to Ray. The wraith wriggled under his gaze and tried to make herself small. She only clung to her undead life because a wraith was a big investment for a necromancer. Killing her would leave Kate weakened, so, begrudgingly, they spared the bitch. Kate promised she would keep Ray on a short leash. The crowds started to disperse after the execution, though a few stuck around long enough to see Councilwoman Blackthorn remove the curse from Kate and accept her oath of fealty. District 263 was now a part of Councilwoman Blackthorn's domain. Only one threat remained to District 114. Destry himself. Chapter 34. Selena's face was buried in her pillow, trying to silence her sobs. The fabric of the pillowcase was drenched in her tears. She lifted her head, and her bloodshot eyes glared at the toy on her dresser. A teddy bear, it was called. Fabric crudely shaped to resemble a bear and filled with soft stuffing. Ella had given it to her today, moments before she resigned from her father's service. She had given Selena a sad smile and a bow as she said her goodbyes. She knew from the promise that Ella had her swear that there had to be more to the teddy bear, but she was furious with Ella. How could she leave her now? Selena threw the pillow across the room and stood up from her bed. She inhaled deeply, trying to end her shuddered breaths. After collecting herself, she left her room. Her new personal guard, whose name slipped her memory, greeted her outside the door.
"Please, fetch the maids to aid me in changing. I wish to tour the gardens."
Her father had finally relented on confining her to the second floor of their manor. However, he still demanded that she not wear her human clothing below the second floor. The difference between the human clothing and the dresses her father wished her to wear was such that she almost contemplated becoming a recluse. 3 maids and half an hour later, she was acceptable enough by her father's standards to venture to the first floor. She was glad she had not tried to sneak into the garden in her human clothing. Her father greeted her as soon as she entered the garden.
"It is good to see you outside, daughter. I feared you would never venture downstairs again."
Her father smiled from his chair that overlooked the garden from the veranda. He held a book in his hands, which Selena was sure was one of the Sherlock Holmes novels he had been reading as of late.
"I wished for some fresh air, father,"
Selena said with a curtsy. Her father gave her a melancholy smile.
"Ella will be missed by us all. She was a fine guard, and I know a good friend of yours. Unfortunately, life sometimes pulls those we care for away from us for a time, as it has with her. She knows, if she ever wishes to return, that there will be a place in the guard for her."
He closed his book and laid it on the small table beside his chair before standing. He held his hand out towards Selina.
"Would you humor your old father and walk with him through the garden?"
Selina smiled as she took his hand. As a child back in Voss, she had loved to walk the gardens with her father. The walks were one of the few times she felt she truly had her father to herself. They only made it a few steps before the memories of the butcher shop tainted the joy she felt. Her smile faltered slightly, though her father failed to notice. He instead was inspecting the grapevines and commenting on how, with time, they would brew wine. They were of an elvish variety that had made their way to Earth as seeds in the pockets of those brought here. The taste of the wine they produced was a fading memory for her. She knew her father wished to preserve as much of Voss on Earth as he could. There were several plants in the garden with a similar origin. Happenstance seeds brought to a new world by reluctant travelers. Each one her father viewed with hope and optimism to create a slice of Voss. There was an infectiousness to it, and she felt a hint of hope grow within her. Maybe things were not as dire as she had feared. Perhaps she was not seeing the whole picture, and there was a vital piece that redeemed her father. This hope allowed her to push aside the foreboding, and the joy of spending time with her father returned. The two of them spent much of the day in the garden, even having lunch in the future vineyard. She could tell her father was putting forth efforts to cheer her up after Ella's resignation.
"My king!"
Dalton, the elven captain of her father's guard, and one other knelt before them. She had not heard them approach, nor had her father. Both of them had been in conversation as they dined.
"Dalton, I am dining with my little girl. Surely this can wait."
Dalton bowed his head lower.
"I apologize, my king. This report is one I am sure you wish to hear with urgency."
Her father gave a nod as he cut into the meat on his plate.
"Very well. What is it?"
Selina saw Dalton start to say something, but the other guard spoke first. The captain of the guard's face took a grim scowl.
"My king, Fargo is dead."
The joy that had been on her father's face moments earlier vanished. He tipped back the rest of his wine and wiped his face with his napkin. His eyes were hard as steel as he stood from the table.
"Please excuse me, daughter. This is a matter that must be discussed in private."
Selina nodded as a knot formed in her gut.
"Very well, father. I believe I will retire to the library myself."
She followed behind her father and the guards until they entered into his study. Quickly, Selina rushed to the library, locking the door as she entered. She arrived at the spy hole in time to see her father mercilessly beating the guard who had spoken. Dalton stood to the side and passively watched the show of violence. She covered her mouth as she let out a small gasp at the sight. The guard begged and pleaded with her father. A savage snarl twisted his face as his fists continued their assault. Her father finally stopped when the guard took his last breath and fell silent. Dalton handed him a cloth to wipe his bloody hands with.
"Apologies, my king. He should have known better than to discuss such matters before the princess."
Her father threw the blood-stained cloth onto the corpse once his hands were clean.
"What happened with Fargo?"
her father asked as he made his way to his desk. Dalton did not take the seat before the desk. Instead, the captain of the guard stood beside it at attention.
His necromancer broke her leash and dragged him before Councilwoman Blackthorn. She swore fealty to her once he was dead.
Dalton paused a moment before continuing.
His execution was carried out by the boss of District 114. Fargo had his brain fried by lightning magic.
Her father held his head in trembling hands. As if triggered by some invisible force, he lashed out, throwing everything on his desk onto the floor.
I am all that's left. Saro is dead, and now so is Fargo. The red-eyed bitch crawled out of her grave and built her power back by dismantling us one by one.
Her father's eyes locked on the only painting in his office, the one of their castle back on Voss. He stared at it in silence for over a minute, his features hardening.
I am a fucking king! Not some warlord who ruled over a few Stone Age tribes hiding out in the alpines of Voss like Saro. Nor am I the spoiled brat that Fargo was, relying on slaves to do my dirty work. I will not accept my fate lying on my back like some dog.
He stood and walked towards the painting, running his hands over the image, as if he willed it enough he could step through it, back to Voss.
Dispose of the body. Then fetch those of the guard you trust and bring them back here. We need to discuss preparations.
Selena left the library shaking. She had to convince her guard that it was due to a chill in the air. Ella would have seen through such a lie with ease. Her new guard just gave a bow and returned to their duty. She draped a shawl over her shoulders and grabbed the teddy bear before returning to the library. Inside the hidden path that led to the speakeasy, she tore the teddy bear in half. She could hear her father discussing preparations for an assault on District 114. As the stuffing fell from the remains of the teddy bear, so too did a box that was hidden within it. Opening the box, she found a cell phone and a note.
Lady Selena, you will probably be mad at me when you read this, and I don't blame you for it. Resigning from being your guard after what happened the other night is a pretty shitty thing for a friend to do. I want you to know that I am not abandoning you. I would never abandon my friend. War is coming, Lady Selena. Truthfully, from what you told me, we are already at war and have been since Sarah was killed. Had I stayed with the guard, there was a very good chance I would have been dragged into it, away from you and the district. Should things get as bad as I fear they could, I want to be here where I can protect you, not as a soldier fighting in another district. The cell phone has my number on it. I am here for you, Lady Selena. Should you find yourself in trouble, call me, and I will come running. I will do everything I can to keep you safe. Always your friend, Ella.
Selena wiped away a tear as she reread the letter before flipping it over. Ella had written instructions on how to use the cell phone. She held down what she knew was the power button on the cell phone until the screen lit up. She found the messages and Ella's name. Selena.
Thank you, Ella, for being my friend.
Chapter 35. Ash threw the iron knife. A thud echoed throughout the old warehouse as the blade found purchase in its target. The old clothing store mannequin was in rough shape when he had first found it. After 2 days of being used as a knife-throwing target, it was barely recognizable as one. He had nearly lived in the old warehouse for those 2 days, having only left once to get supplies from the Flatiron. Cleo had him training in preparation for Destry to finally make his move. Ash walked up and pulled the iron knife from where it had sunken into the wooden body. He saw Silver as he turned around. The rabbitkin was watching him from the doorway of the warehouse.
You're getting better at that. You actually managed to hit with most of your throws now,
Silver said. She shifted back to her banshee form once the door was closed. Cleo no longer needed to hide her identity now that she was in the warehouse, a caution in case Destry had any spies in the district. Ash gave a nod to Cleo and stowed away the iron blade. Celeste gave me some pointers. Speaking of, how goes everything in the district? Ash asked. Cleo looked over the throwing knives he had forged from the iron pikes. Some were plain iron, but others had a handle wrapped in copper. All of them had a cruel barb on the tip that would make removing them difficult. She scrunched her nose, showing her distaste for the metal. Iron didn't play well with death magic.
Good. Both gangs have maintained the peace in the district and have sowed misinformation for any spies that might be around. Rumors on the street for your disappearance say Phelan went into heat and is keeping you in bed,
Cleo said with a wink. Ash frowned. Wait, do beastkins go into heat? I thought that was just a myth. Cleo laughed.
They only do it if they have a mate. You will be in for several very busy days when Phelan really does go into it.
He had a hard time picturing Phelan being hornier than she already was. Cleo's voice broke him from his contemplation on how he would survive when that day came.
Well, are you ready to begin?
Cleo asked. Ash gave her a reluctant nod.
Yeah. So are we going straight into you kicking my ass or Kelpie 101?
Cleo crossed her arms and gave him a stern look. Ash nodded his head.
Right. Knowing your enemy is the most important thing in a fight, he said with a sigh.
Cleo smiled.
We'll discuss it every time before we spar so that it's ingrained into that rock you call a brain. Fights are intense, and you could forget something about your opponent that would get you killed. More so if your enemy is a fae.
Cleo started pacing back and forth in the warehouse. She held her hands behind her back and walked in a way that reminded Ash of some of his college professors.
Right, let's begin. Kelpies are part of the subgroup of Fae called Beast-like Fae, which are Fae whose magic form is limited to an animal avatar. The Kelpie's avatar form is that of a horse, made of death and water magic. Iron and lightning will be effective against them, but don't let that lull you into a sense of security. They are very dangerous paranormals, with a penchant for drowning their victims. Destry himself likes to do this by using water magic to create a globe of water and trapping his enemy's head in it. Escaping such a spell requires you to disrupt their control of the spell by inserting your own magic.
Ash listened as he went through his warm-up stretches. Cleo gave him a question look that asked if he was paying attention.
Also, never touch a Kelpie in their horse avatar. Their death and water magic will bind you to them, at which point they usually jump in some nearby water to drown you.
Ash added the next part to show he was paying attention. Cleo gave an approving nod.
When do you think he'll come with his army?
Ash asked.
Soon. He's not a patient man. Now get ready.
Cleo pulled off the black hoodie, revealing a gray sports bra to match her yoga pants. The first time she had revealed the outfit, Ash had to keep back intrusive thoughts. Now, the knowledge he was about to get his ass handed to him kept those at bay. Fog billowed off Cleo as she charged forward at him with incredible speed. Ash pulled on his magic and activated a lightning claw in both of his hands. Cleo's body was gone. Instead, a black fog tried to surround Ash. This was Cleo's avatar form, at least one of them.
He struck out with a lightning claw each time the fog came near him. The attacks were not intended to deal damage to Cleo. Trying to defeat her was not the point of this training. It was about surviving a fight with a fey. Instead, the lightning claw was used to inject his magic into the magical fog. This disrupted Cleo's control of it. The training exercise was like trying to disperse smoke with a hand fan in the middle of a forest fire. Eventually, he messed up and a wisp of fog got to him. He was flung across the warehouse by it. Ash stared at the rafters of the warehouse as Cleo reformed and berated him for the mistake. The moment he got up, they would start the exercise over again. He wondered if Phelan and Naomi were having an easier time than him. The shovel bit into the ground, and Bo threw the load of dirt into the wheelbarrow. He wished Phelan was still here to help him with her earth magic. Expanding the tunnel would have taken her mere minutes instead of the hours Bo was sinking into it. Then this trap would already be done, and he would be in bed with Jacqueline. But Phelan was doing her training with Naomi at Lil's place. Bo sighed. He wished he was home with Jacqueline right now. The thought of her waiting for him in bed wearing that lacy nightie and a seductive smile was almost enough to make Bo say screw it and run home to his lady. He wouldn't, really. This was important, and not just to Ash. He shook his head and focused on his task. He was doing this for Jacqueline and everyone else in District 114. Destry was coming soon, with an army, and Ash was relying on him to help defend the district. The whole thing had been a nostalgia trip for him, back to his mercenary days on Voss. He had spent the past few days establishing a communication order, seeding misinformation for any spies in the district, and mad dashes hidden at night to create traps. All the stuff Bo had experience with from his mercenary days. He might not have earned a nickname like Cleo or that Sarrow bastard, but give him time and resources, and he would be anyone's nightmare.
"This'll be a nasty surprise for those bastards," Reuben said as the scarred bearkin took the wheelbarrow.
Bo nodded in agreement.
"It will play to Phelan's strengths. Make sure no one sees you dumping that soil into the storm drains by the portal. We don't want any spies to figure out we're up to something."
The hulking bearkin gave a nod of understanding before heading out of the tunnel. The soil from excavating would play its part once Destry launched his attack. Wind magic tore through the twisting branches above as frost spread along the ground, driving back the vines that were approaching them. Naomi held her side admirably, though Phelan could see she was starting to get winded. Fire and walls of stone helped contain the overgrowth on her side. She also had her iron claws active for any that got through, or for when she inevitably ran out of magic.
"You're starting to look tired, Naomi,"
Lily taunted, hidden within the trees. Naomi said nothing. She instead took a deep, steady breath. She raised her sword, Torrent, and readied herself for the next onslaught by the Dryad. Lily had warned them that she would not hold back when they asked for help training. Phelan and Naomi had no illusion that it would be easy either. Still, Ash was training with Cleo so he could protect the district. There was no way they were going to sit around while he did that. She and Naomi were both determined to become stronger. The next wave of attacks started, and Naomi used her ice magic to deal with the threats on the ground and Torrent to deal with the ones from above. Phelan glimpsed the risen earth snaking towards Naomi and tried to warn her. She was too late. Vines erupted from the ground under Naomi. Lily had gone underground to protect against the ice magic that had been keeping her vines at bay. Naomi gave Phelan a sad smile, accepting her defeat as the vines whisked her off the ground and carried her into the trees.
And Titzilla is out of here!